Hey, Moving Forward listeners, here's today's Poshmark Power Tip. If you don't have access to a printer, you can use a shipping QR code from a Poshmark sale by generating it on the app. Simply take your phone to the post office along with the package and show the QR code to a USPS rep. They'll scan it and take care of the rest. For more Poshmark seller tips, check out the Poshmark Guide for Individuals and Small Businesses, which is available on Amazon in paperback, Kindle, and as an audiobook on Audible and Apple Audiobooks. Start learning and moving forward today. Hey, John Lim here. We're moving forward with episode 465. I hope everyone is having a great week. I'm actually recording this on a Saturday. So by the time you're listening to this, it'll be close to actually another weekend. And I want to welcome any new listeners to the podcast. We're getting new listeners almost every week. Thank you so much for checking out Moving Forward. I do recommend check out the trailer, episode 000. That'll give you background on the podcast, and you can pick and choose your own Moving Forward journey. There are a lot of different episodes and types of episodes to choose from, so you can create your own Moving Forward journey based off of the past episodes and the current ones. Right now, I am doing a series on writing your first book. I've talked about this in the past, but this is a kind of a refresh that I'm doing right now, and it's concurrent with the fact that I'm actually teaching a class through the Johns Hopkins Odyssey program. This is my third time teaching this class, and I'm having a great time with it. So for those of you who are interested in the subject, but maybe you didn't get a chance to sign up for the course, or you missed the registration window, you can listen to this podcast and get some of the fundamentals. I also have a weekly newsletter, The Weekly Quirk, that comes out on Fridays. And I've been sharing a lot of writing tips in my newsletter as well. Speaking of which, I just came back, as I'm recording this on Saturday, I just came back from the reunion weekend at Johns Hopkins. It was held at the main campus called the Homewood Campus, for those of you who've ever been. It's a beautiful, beautiful campus. I didn't actually spend a lot of time there because I went to the business school, the graduate school, and that was in a whole separate building. But the main undergraduate campus is, if you're ever in Baltimore, I do recommend visit it. It's absolutely beautiful. The library is absolutely stunning. In fact, they filmed a couple of movies in that library. And of course, you've got the museums and you've got many different schools there. And I was there actually in part to promote the Odyssey program, which is what I teach my writing course through. And so they asked me, and I was honored that they picked me to kind of be a representative and ambassador, if you will. And I created a mini course that I taught this morning to a mix of different alum from different eras and different years. And it was a lot of fun. It was not a writing course. I actually just designed a whole separate course on 10 networking tools that you're probably not using, but should be. That was kind of the title of the course. And it was a lot of fun. I had a great time. Let me share what some of the highlights were. Of course, teaching the class was one of them, but I loved, I kind of got the royal red carpet treatment, as it did pretty much all of the reunion attendees, many of whom are flying in from different parts of the country. And they had, I have to give a shout out, they had students and staff members driving golf carts all over campus that were kind of acting as makeshift taxis, taking people from one end of the campus to the other for all the different reunion events. And I had very, very nice person actually offered to drive me to where I was giving my lecture. And it was a lot of fun just riding in the golf cart and just talking to her and all of the different things that were going on. So that was a lot of fun. And the lunch, they had a huge lunch in a tent in the middle of campus. And one of the highlights, well, they had a lot of good food there, but they had a Dippin' Dots station. If you remember, or if you've ever had Dippin' Dots, they used to be staples in malls around the 1990s and early 2000s. It was once branded the ice cream of the future. I think they stopped doing that because it's been around for over 30 years. And so whatever the vision of the future is, Dippin' Dots has been around long enough so that it's just now Dippin' Dots. So it's just that ice cream that's in the shape of little dots or they look like little pebbles, and they had an actual station for that. So that was really cool. So those were just some of the highlights. Just wanted to share a little bit of that. But back to book writing. So I've been doing this series over the last couple of weeks. If you're just new to the podcast, I do recommend check out some of the prior episodes. And we've been talking about book writing over the past couple of weeks. If you're taking my class right now, you're actually getting a little bit of a sneak peek, as we'll be covering this tonight in class, some of the things I'll be talking about. So one of the things I want to cover is, and we talked about The Art of the Sloppy First Draft. That was last week's class. Do check it out if you haven't had a chance to. And my philosophy is, when you're writing the first draft of your book, it's better not to edit while you write. And I have a whole list of reasons for that. And I can say from personal experience, having written several books, that is the most efficient way to do it. Just write a sloppy first draft, and your goal with that draft is to get it done. Not easy to do if you have it ingrained in your habit that you edit while you write. It's something that comes natural to a lot of us. The more you're able to write without editing for that first draft, the better. Later, after the break, we're going to talk about editing when that does come into play. But before we get to that, let's talk about writer's block. And I like to say, and I've said this to my class, and I'm going to share with you, writer's block, in my opinion, well, first of all, it is a real phenomenon. Writer's block is that what I liken to hitting a wall. If you are running a marathon, if you imagine that writing a book is like running a marathon, writer's block feels like you're hitting a wall. And in fact, that is the analogy that a lot of runners will use as they're describing the very last mile of a very long marathon, is that they feel like they are running through a wall, because you're making that last push, but you're winded, you're tired. And that's what I think writer's block is like. And so let's talk about it. And I like to say it's a when, not an if question. I've experienced writer's block, I think, with every book that I've written. And I want to prepare you, because I think if you're going to write a book and you're going to spend a lot of time writing, especially if this is your first book, writer's block is likely to happen. And so the good news is that it is a common phenomenon. I think every writer experiences it at one point or another. And there are ways you can deal with it. So what exactly is writer's block? I define it as more than just an off day. If you have an off day, and we talked about the reasonable writing schedule, we talked about how to manage your time, and we talked about being strategic about what you write on a particular day. Regardless of all of that, there will still be times where you will have such an off day that you'll barely be able to squeeze out a word or two. And I've had instances where I had a lot of time on my hands, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to just get so much done. But much to my chagrin, when I sit down to write, for whatever reason, I just couldn't get out more than a couple of sentences. And it's a really frustrating feeling, especially when you do have more time to write, but then you find that the words are not coming to you and that you're just not able to push through it. So I think of writer's block in three different levels. But I do define it, the serious version of it, as being more than just an off day. And we'll talk more about that. All right, so the three levels of writer's block. Let's say you have that off day. You've had a lot on your mind. You've had a stressful day. Or for whatever reason, you just can't get into the flow of things. What I recommend is, if that happens, don't try to power through it. Take a break. Take a break. Take a walk, get some fresh air, listen to some music, drink a cup of coffee or a favorite beverage. And this is also a good time to check in with your accountability buddy. And I've talked about this on prior episodes. It's a good idea to have an accountability buddy, in part to encourage you, but also for situations like this where you feel like you can't get into a flow. And part of that is so that you don't have to just suffer in silence. You can have someone you can commiserate with, and they'll be able to relate. For the most part, I think even if they've never written a book, they can probably relate with some project they may have worked on, whether for work or something else, in which they had a similar situation. So I think it's good to have someone to talk through that with. And you may find that that is all you need to get you out of that writer's block. Even if that particular writing day is shot, the next day, let's say your 3 days a week are Tuesday, Thursday and Saturday. Maybe Tuesday is an off day, but by the time you get back to it on Thursday, you might find that you're back to working order. All right, that's just kind of the first level. The mid-level is if you have, say, 2 days in a row. If this is more than just a one-off thing, it's 2 days in a row, my next level of response would be actually, and this is going to sound very counterintuitive, is to write more. Not to take a break, but to actually write more. But not writing your book. I would actually recommend take a break from the book, but do some other form of writing. And this is a good time to brush off a journal if you have a journal, or do a blog. Oftentimes when I have writer's block with books, I will turn to other writing. And one of the benefits of having a weekly podcast is I do a write-up for that podcast episode. It used to be on my website with a blog. Now it's a big part of my newsletter. So I find that doing other kind of writing can sometimes get me out of writer's block. And the analogy I'll use is that if you've ever run, and back to running, and you get a cramp, what do the experts tell you? They actually tell you not to sit down and stop running, but to walk it off, walk off the cramp. And that's what I liken to the mid-level writer's block, is to walk it off by doing more writing, but do some other kind of writing. And it can be a blog, it can be an article, a newsletter, or even if you just want to write in your journal. I think those are good ways to continue to untie the knot that you're feeling. I would say even an email or a text message. Those are all good ways to exercise your writing muscles and to walk off the cramp, so to speak. All right, let's talk about the third level. This is more serious. Let's say you've done the take a break, check in with your accountability buddy. Let's say you try to write more and you still can't get back into the writing flow. And let's say it's been more than 2 weeks. That's what I consider serious writer's block. Most of the one-off writer's block, it's a bad day or even bad 2 days. Those you can get over fairly quickly. It's when you hit the situation in which you just can't get anything out. And it's been more than 2 weeks. And 2 weeks would be about 6 writing sessions if you're following the reasonable writing schedule. Then it's a little more serious. So what would you do, or what do I recommend you do at that point? At that point, I would seriously consider taking a vacation. And I'm going to underscore vacation. I'm going to distinguish that from simply putting your book away and saying, you know what, I can't do this right now. I'll come back to it later. It's very, very dangerous to do that. If you close your book, close your laptop, close your notebook, whatever tool you're using, put it in a drawer and say, I can't do this right now. It's not coming to me. I'm just going to pick it up later. Don't be vague about it, because the danger in doing that is that when you leave a project, time continues on, and sometimes it feels like time continues on very quickly. So a day will turn into a week will turn into a month into several months, and before you know it, your book is an unfinished project that you just left behind. And that's not what you want. You want to actually finish this book. So what I recommend is, rather than doing that, take a vacation. Now, what do you do when you take a vacation? You have to plan it out. And that includes a start date and a return date. Think about if you're going to travel and you're going to take time off from work. You have to get clearance from your boss or manager. You have to set your travel dates, accommodations. You have to plan it out. There's actually a lot of planning that goes into a vacation, even if it's a simple one. And the most basic thing you have to plan is, when are you going to start and when are you going to come back? Treat a break from your book in the same way. Treat it like a vacation. Plan it out. When does your vacation start? When does it end? And set a firm end date. Put it on your calendar. Treat it as if it were a job or a second job. Check in with your accountability buddy and make sure your accountability buddy knows that you're going to take a vacation and knows your start and end dates. And in fact, a good accountability buddy will remind you as you're getting closer to the end date. They'll reach out and say, hey, something like, hey, your vacation's almost coming to an end. Are you ready to get back into your book? That's what you want in an accountability buddy. So take a vacation, but treat it like a vacation. Start and end dates. And it doesn't matter how long it takes. So for the last book I wrote, The Poshmark Guide, I ran into writer's block. So it came out, as I recall, it was what, September, fall, August, September of 22. And I had been writing the third or fourth version of the manuscript all through the past winter and spring. And it was around May that I hit writer's block and I just couldn't get through it. And so I decided to take a vacation and I didn't come back to it until July. That was my firm end date for my vacation. But when I did, I was ready to continue writing. I was ready to get back to work. And I actually found that the time away was very helpful. I was very refreshed. And that's the good news. For the most part, writer's block is something that you can get over. You may have to take a little bit of time off. It may be more than just a day or a week. And if that's the case, plan it out. But for the most part, you're going to be able to get back to it once you do. It's very rarely, I think, in my opinion, a sign that there's something wrong with your book concept, especially if you've done all the pre-planning steps that we talked about before, the vetting, the ideation, the outlining. And it's more a matter of maybe you have too much going on or maybe you're just burning out a little bit. So don't be afraid to take some time off, but if you take significant time off, treat it like a vacation. All right, so that is my take on writer's block. Again, I believe it is a when, not an if question. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we do, we're going to talk about editing. Hey, Moving Forward listeners. As you know, I try to provide as much helpful information as I can for free on this podcast, covering different topics and areas. But if you need more personalized assistance with starting a business on Poshmark, writing a book, or launching a podcast, I now offer coaching through the Clarity platform where you can book a call with me. To learn more, head over to bemovingforward.com and click Book a Coaching Call at the top. You can also find a quick link within my link tree, which is in the show notes for this episode. Whether it's a quick 5-minute pick your brain call or a 50-minute deep dive into your goals, let's connect so you can start moving forward today. All right, welcome back. We're moving forward with episode 465. And in the first half, we talked about writer's block. And now we're going to talk about second drafts. And this is really now where your editing part of your brain starts to kick in. But also, you're still in a little bit of drafting mode. And I'm going to talk about this, breaking it down between the different tools. All right, so let's start with voice, which is one of the most unorthodox ways of writing your first draft. Now, there are a couple ways you can go about writing a second draft when your first draft is voice. One of which is you can have your voice notes or voice recordings transcribed. If you go that route, I'm going to recommend you do one of two things. Either hire a professional transcriber, and they usually charge per word or per minute, and you can find many ones out there. Or you can use any number of tools, such as Google Speech to Text. I think Microsoft Word has one. There are a number of different ones, and most of them, I think, are free. They're not perfect, but they're going to be better than the alternative of you listening to the voice recordings and transcribing it yourself. I don't recommend you do that. Unless you're a professional transcriber and you can write shorthand and you can do this very quickly, I'm going to recommend that you not try to transcribe your own voice recordings, because it's going to take too long. It's going to be too tedious. You will be better off spending some money and actually having someone professional do it. Or if you don't have the budget, then I recommend you can use any number of free transcription tools to do this on your own. And you may even want to dictate out your book. So, I briefly mentioned that's a good way to use voice, is that you can actually dictate into a transcribing piece of software or app that's part of a word processor. So voice, that's going to require some transcription. The other way of using voice, and this goes more into the second draft and editing, is that you can listen to the voice recordings and then just basically reword it and redraft it in an electronic form. And this is where you're going to start to put some shape into it. All right, let's talk about pen and paper. I think of pen and paper as the basis of your first draft. It's the foundation point, but then you're going to have to build in time to get it translated into an electronic format for the second draft. And again, one thing you can do is you can just read through your pen and paper draft and then write a new draft electronically, one that's going to be cleaner with more organization, or you can have someone transcribe it. You could also transcribe it yourself, but that's kind of bordering on tedious. It's probably not quite as tedious as voice, but it's still going to be a lot of work to transcribe it yourself. So if you're going to go the transcription route, I would recommend either hire someone, or if you don't have the budget, you may want to dictate it out. So you're kind of combining voice and pen and paper. But a good way to use either voice or pen and paper is to actually just use it as a basis and then use the information to redraft or create essentially a new draft that's electronic. All right, let's talk about computer. This would also apply to third-party writing devices. The benefit of having started out on your computer is that you're now going to be focusing on what you wanted to do in the beginning, which is edit. You can go through, and computers are great for editing. They're maybe too good for editing, as we talked about with the sloppy first draft. The inclination is there and you got to resist it. But now you can start to add some shape and structure, clean up the grammar and spelling. And once you have that electronic draft that you did in your first draft, you can just go and continue to update that. One thing I would recommend as a good practice is to save different versions of your document. So and Word does a good job of this with the track changes. I think Google Docs has something similar, but you can also manually save different versions. And I usually just add the suffix V1 or V2 just to designate it, just so you have backups. Because when you're using your computer, you definitely want to back up your work. Same thing with third-party software. I talked about the Neo 2 and the FreeWrite. You can transfer those to your electronic version and then start working on the editing. All right, that's going to wrap it up for today. Next week, I will talk about the next stage of editing, which is working with an editor. Watch out for the newsletter issue. The next issue will be coming out tomorrow, so you can read more about writer's block and editing or second drafts in the newsletter. All right, I hope you have a great weekend. You can find all the information at bemovingforward.com, and I'll be back next week. For more information, head over to bemovingforward.com. The views expressed by any featured guests are not necessarily those of the host, the program, or affiliates. Moving Forward is produced by John Lim and bemovingforward.com. All rights reserved.